So we left off last time, perhaps at our greatest cliffhanger in the Sefer. We're in Sefer Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Tes. Eliyahu is in the midst of being in hiding after having decreed with a shvua in front of Hashem to King Achav of the north that there would be no rain, that rain would stop. Eliyahu taking the offense that Klal Yisrael has been worshipping idols so much, and how could they not get punished? And so he takes a shvua that there won't be any rain unless he says there will be rain. And so the rain stops. Eliyahu's kind of under guidance of Hashem to be in different places. He hangs out by one creek for a while. And then he ends up traveling north to a place near Sidon. And he meets up with an almana, a woman. And she is providing for him through a miracle. She said she had nothing to provide for him. He tells her Hashem will take care of it. And it's a miracle. The flour, the oil, keep going. And then we read in Pasuk Yud Zayin and Yud Ches, how it was after a certain amount of time, the child of this woman, who is introduced to us as the Balas HaBayis, we now hear her, sounds like she is the landlady. She's the landlord of Eliyahu, and that'll be attested to in the next Pasuk. Her son becomes sick to the extent that doesn't seem to be a neshama, doesn't seem to be life, a soul there, and she brings him. She says to Eliyahu, "You know what's going on? Since you've come here, you came here to kill my son." And again, whether she's saying that basically that her merits don't weigh heavily in light of Eliyahu's, but she's obviously very distraught. So, we're continuing Pasuk Yates. Vayomer Eleha, Eliyahu says to her, "Tini Li esbenich, give to me your son." Ve'yikachehu mechika, he takes her from her bosom. Ve'yaleyu el ha'aliyah asher hu yoshev sham, and Eliyahu carries him up to the aliyah. The aliyah is usually some form of a second story, some type of attic. The houses didn't have many stories. A lot of times they had some level of a second story. Asher hu yoshev sham, this was where he dwelt. I mean, this matches up to what we said previously, that she was the Isha Baalas HaBayis, that she wasn't only providing him with food, but there was room as well as board. It was room and board. So, Hu Yoshev Sham, Vayashkivehu al Mitaso, Eliyahu laid down the child, on his bed. What Eliyahu didn't do is he didn't answer her back in terms of her claim of, you know, that you're coming here to remind me of my sin and you're coming to kill my son. He doesn't, he goes to action as opposed to words. The only thing he says to her is, "Give me your son." And now he takes the son. Pasuk Chaf. Vayikra el Hashem, he calls out to Hashem, Vayomar, and he says, "Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, Hagam al ha'almana asher ani misgorer ima, Hariosa lahamis espina." Also, this almana, this widow that I am dwelling with her in her home, Hariosa, are you Hashem doing something that's ra, something that's evil, lahamis espina, to kill her son? So, to what exactly is he referring to? Is that there in Eliyahu's mind, those who are guilty are deserving of being punished and should be punished severely. But those who are innocent, in his mind, don't deserve to be punished. And so he sees Klal Yisrael right now going through the drought as being deserving of going through a drought, however severe it may be. And yet, Hagam Almana, he's saying, are you throwing her in with the lot of the rest of Klal Yisrael that you are causing something bad to happen to her son? On the other possibility is that recently we had, again, it seemed to be a strange story, but the story that shifted us from Perek Tes Zayin into Perek Yud Zayin was the story of Chiel, and Chiel who built up Yericho against the oath and curse of Yehoshua. So he had, the Pasuk testified, that his sons, at least two of them, but it seems that all of them, throughout the building of Yericho, died. And so Eliyahu is kind of contrasting this woman who's righteous, who's been taking care of him, with Chiel, who did something right. So Hagama Almana, also this Almana, are you being this way to this Almana? It doesn't, quote unquote, it doesn't make any sense. He puts in Asher Animis Gor Ima, that I am dwelling with her. It's almost as if he's taking a very, just what we would call a rational way of thinking, in the sense that he owes her. He literally owes her. She has been giving him sustenance. Granted, it's coming through the miracle of Hashem, and Hashem could have given any miracle. For whatever reason, Hashem chose the first miracle would happen, that the first miracle was only half a miracle, right? There was a spring of water. That's pretty natural. There were these ravens that were bringing food. That's not so natural. That's definitely more miracle. But it's involving an animal. For whatever reason, Hashem chose that the vehicle for this next stage of providing for Eliyahu would be a fellow human, would be this woman. And so Asher Ani Misgorima, I've been dwelling with her, I owe her, and yet somehow now something really negative is happening to her son. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayismodeid al hayelad. It's a little bit of a strange word. Vayismodeid, Rashi says milashon mida, which is sounds like some type of, usually we refer to it as some type of measurement. And then Rashi says nishtateich, or nishtatach, alav. He stretched out. So the translation says he stretched himself over the boy. He laid down on top of the boy. Vayismodeid al hayelad shalosh pa'amim, three times. Radak thinks that since we're about to perform a miracle of reviving back a body of someone who's no longer alive, so there has to be some level when Nevi'im go ahead and do even a miracle, they want it to look as natural as possible. And in those times, again, not modern medicine we're not focusing on, warming up the body was something that was considered that could maybe help the situation. And so on a very natural level, he's lying on top of the body in order to add warmth, and warmth would bring life. And so that's kind of, at least in the Radak's opinion, that's why he's doing something in a more of a physical way, even though he's beseeching Hashem for a miracle. So Vayismodeid al hayelad shalosh pa'amim, three times. Vayikra al Hashem, he calls out to Hashem again. Vayomar, and he says, Hashem Elokai, Hashem, my God, Tashav Na, please return, Nefesh Hayelad Hazeh Al Kirbo, the soul of this boy, to his, on his insides, meaning bring his soul back within him. He's requesting a Trias HaMesim, he's requesting the revival of the dead. Pasuk of Beis, Vayishma Hashem Bekol Eliyahu, Hashem listens to the voice of Eliyahu, Vatashav Nefesh Hayelad Al Kirbo, and he returned the life of the child to his insides, Vayechi, and he's alive. This seems to be the first time in Tanakh that this happens, that someone is, again, we said there was a minority opinion that said maybe he was only on the verge of death, and it just wasn't noticeable that there was, you know, a small sign of life. He probably didn't have the heart monitor, It was, you know, there was faint life, but most assume that the boy died, and now is being brought back to life, which is rather historic. Going back to what we had said, that Chazal teach us, and the Gemara teaches us about these three keys, that Hashem is in control, that Hashem, you know, kind of gave the key of reign over to Eliyahu, and there's a key of childbirth, and there's a key of bringing someone back to life. So now Eliyahu had to access this key, and that kind of gave the window for Hashem to take back the key of rain. And basically this story will usher us in the next few psukim, into the next parak, where the beginning of the rain story is, the beginning of the drought is going to come to a close. So that Eliyahu also seems very confident that Tchiyas HaMesim is going to be able to happen. He was confident in that this woman was really innocent. She really deserved this miracle to take place. He said it, and Hashem went ahead and listened. Some of the Mefarshim talk about the fact that she embodies the trait of charity, and that the trait of charity is the trait, Chazal say, that's the trait that brings out Tchiyas HaMesim, that brings out the revival of the dead. I don't know if there's any connection, but we happen to put a very big focus on those who are no longer with us and charity, right? The whole Yisker service is about giving tzedakah in the name or in the merit of that we constantly link charity and charitable causes with someone who is no longer alive in the hopes and the merits of bringing tchias ameisim. Pasuk chaf gimel vayikach Eliyahu asayelet. He takes the boy who's now alive. Vayoridehu min aliyah. He brings him down from that second story from his room habaisa of the house. Vayineu liimo. He gives the child to his mother. Vayomer Eliyahu rei chai v'nech. See that your son is alive. Almost taking no credit for it. Right? You gave me a child that wasn't alive. Here's your son. He's alive. That's it. Doesn't say I brought him back to life. Just hands the child over. But Pasuk Chav Dalet, to kind of conclude this story, Vatomer Ha'isha El Eliyahu. The woman says to Eliyahu, Ata Ze Yadati. Now, because of this, Yadati, I know, Ki Isha Lokim Ata, that you are a man of God. Udvar Hashem Beficha Emes. And the word of Hashem that's in your mouth is true. So it's definitely a striking phrase, Ata Ze Yadati, because until now she has to have known that Eliyahu was a Ish Elokim because of the first miracle, the miracle that for the last year her flour hasn't run out and her oil hasn't run out. Ata Ze Yadati, now I know, it's basically, I think it's trying to talk about just the level of Ish Elokim. And so for those of us who haven't come in contact with a Navi, with an Ish Elokim, so we think they're all amazing, and they all sound to be lofty, but that maybe that there are different levels, that there are different gradations. And now through this, meaning making flour last, that's one miracle, but Tchias HaMesim, that's a whole other type of miracle. There's a similar language that not a human uses. There's a similar language used by the Torah, which seems to be right in the Akedah story that we had 2 weeks ago. So it says Ata Yadati. After there's first Hashem tells Avraham Avinu to do the Akedah. Then all of a sudden, when he actually is ready to take the knife to Yitzchak, so the pasuk says all of a sudden there's a malach, and the malach says, "Don't Al Tashlach Yadcha Al Anar. Don't." And then the Malach says, Ata Yadati, you know, kind of now I know that you are a Yirei Elokim, that you are fearful of Hashem. So the question that many of the Mefarshim ask is, what is Avram, until now, all the other tests that Avram did proved that he was quite the fearful one of God. So Rashi takes the approach that it wasn't that Avram needed to prove anything to himself. It was that the Chazal, Rashi quotes from Chazal that it was going to be other nations. Would now Hashem would be able to tell other than, you want to know why I picked Avram? He was willing to do the Akedah. And so it didn't prove anything about Avram himself. But there are other Mefarshim who say that it was Avram himself. Avram himself was raised, and in his own eyes was raised, because this was a test that challenged Avram's essence. Avram's essence was an essence of kindness, and here he was asked to take his son to be slaughtered. The Vilna Gaon gives an additional answer. He says that a malach, again, you have to take this for what it's worth, a malach is created when you do a mitzvah. When you do a mitzvah, a malach is created. But depending on how much you put into the mitzvah, that's how strong, or that's how powerful, that's how spiritual the malach is. So the more you do the mitzvah in a better way, the better the malach. So the malach is doing the talking. The Malach says, Ata Yadati, because you went through this Akedah and you were willing to do everything that Hashem said, it created me as a Malach. And now I see myself as what a lofty level I am. Ata Yadati, Yirei Elokim. It must mean because I'm such a lofty Malach that was created through your action, it must be that you are really such an Ish Elokim. So it's a similar language here. Obviously, it's being said by a person, but she's obviously so overtaken by the fact that her son is brought back to life, that she says, Ati Adati, that you're an Ish Elokim, and that the Dvar Hashem Beficha is true.
Yisrosa,
Same expression. So see, so whether she's borrowing it or she's just, you know, it happens to be, you know, coincidence, whatever that means. But it's interesting to note. There's a big picture question that I don't necessarily have a good answer to is outside of the explanation of that Eliyahu needs to act. Eliyahu needs to kind of give the key of rain back to Hashem. So he borrows the key to Tchiyas HaMeisim. Outside of that, you know, what is gained by this story? And who knows about this story? Well, clearly three people know about the story. Eliyahu, the woman, and her son. But we're about to hear in Perek Yerches that nobody knows where Eliyahu is. So whoever he is hiding in Sidon, it's been so successful that no one in the northern kingdom knows where Eliyahu is, and no one in Sidon knows that this is Eliyahu. So he's totally undercover. Yirmiyahu is writing this for, and we're reading it. Yirmiyahu writes it hundreds of years after it happened. But who knows about this? And so that's the question. Now clearly, when you hear a story like this and you're beginning, if you're right, if we grew up with some, if you don't learn Malachim, then you don't really know who Eliyahu is. You know, you grew up hearing him, all the songs and things like that. So here, we're building his resume. He sounds, there is no Sefer Eliyahu, right? We have a Yirmiyahu and Yishayahu, but clearly because the Tanakh is testifying this miracle happened, clearly he's such a great Navi. So is it there for us to appreciate him going forward, right? The next parak, Parak Yud Ches, is going to be the introduction and then the actual famous showdown on Har HaKarmel, which is probably the most public that a Navi could ever be. In front of the nation, in front of the king, in front of the false prophets, he's going to try to prove that God is right. So that's very public. Here, it's extremely private, and we don't necessarily know who knows about this. We don't hear. He seems to, right. The next pasuk is going to say that Hashem tells him to move on. He's going to basically leave being in hiding and begin the path to being revealed and to end the drought. So why this story is here and what it does for it? Besides that, it's obviously a wow story, and it's going to be. When we're introduced to Eliyahu's student Elisha, we are going to compare and contrast. There are, right, we mentioned it last week, very famously, is a very similar story that happens to Elisha. Elisha actually brings two people back to life. There's a pasuk that implies that Elisha is going to do double that which his master, that's what his teacher Eliyahu did. But something to think about is kind of bigger picture, why the story is here, and what it kind of does for us going forward. So we'll continue Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Aleph, which happens to be the Haftorah for Parshas Kisisa, and it's almost the entire Perek. So when we finish it, you'll gain an appreciation for why it would be the Haftorah for Parshas Kisisa. Pasuk Aleph, Vayhi Yamim Rabim. It was after many days, meaning here we're going back in terms of timeline. We're including whenever the drought started. So it appears that Eliyahu was in the first location for a year, in the second location, not exactly sure. Vayhi Yamim Rabim. It was after many days. Udvar Hashem Haya Eliyahu. The word of Hashem came to Eliyahu. Bashana Hashlishas. It's the third year. So he spent 1 year in the first location, at least a full year and plus in the second location, and maybe 2 years. But it's sometime in that third year. In terms of counting from, the Radak reminds us, Latziras Geshamim, from the time that the rain had stopped.
The second location is with the woman.
The second location was near Tzidon, with the woman. They had, what the town was, what was it? Had a name. Where?
Tzarfas.
So it's after 3 years. Dvar Hashem Hayaliya Bashan Ashlishas in 30 year Lamar saying, Lech Hira E Elachav. Go and show yourself. Go and appear before Achav, the king. The Etna Matar Alpne Adama. And I, God, shall send rain upon the ground. That the rain is obviously Hashem is in control of the rain. Hashem honored Eliyahu's desire that the people were deserving of a punishment. And now Hashem is saying, Ad Kan. The Radak writes that there was some form, there must have, I guess the Radak is saying almost from a must perspective. The Radak says there must have been some form of teshuva, that among the masses, the Jews, must have seen the lack of rain, and they went ahead and inspired themselves to do tshuva. The Radak cites from the next perek that there's a pasuk that talks about 7,000 individuals in the northern kingdom that had committed themselves to not bowing down to the Baal, to not worshiping Avodah Zarah. So maybe it's in their merit, but enough was enough. The punishment needed to end, but Hashem wants Eliyahu to be involved. It's like two sides of the coin. Hera el Achav, you show yourself to Achav. Ve'etna matar al pnei adam, and I, Hashem, will bring the water. I will bring the rain. Because if Eliyahu is not involved, if he's been in hiding and he remains in hiding, and it all starts raining, so Achav's going to say, okay, by chance, happens to be at the time that Eliyahu told us that it wouldn't be rain, there wasn't rain. But look, it started raining, having nothing to do with Eliyahu. So in order to show Achav, the rest of his merry men, or women, the Izebel, in order to show them that there was a God, that this was a spiritually induced drought, so therefore the Navi has to be there for the end of it as well. What's interesting is that the Hashem makes it almost sound pretty simple. Go and show yourself to Achav, and I'm going to bring the rain. So you would expect Eliyahu comes in front of Achav, and the skies darken, and everything gets wet. It doesn't appear that way, and at least from the psukim themselves, there does not seem to be any game plan of how the rain is going to come about. And it's almost as if, because as we see, it's almost as if Eliyahu has the, I wouldn't say poetic license, almost like prophetic license to choreograph, to set up how is the rain finally going to come. It's going to come because Hashem says so. It's going to come now because God is determining it. But the way it's going to come about and kind of the whole show of it seems to be given over to Eliyahu without Hashem telling him, by the way, you can figure out how to make this happen. I'm just going to bring the rain very soon. Whether it's understood, it's between the lines, it's somewhere, that's something to think about. So this is the command. Pasuk Beis. Vayelcha Eliyahu, so Eliyahu goes right away. Again, the Navi is not telling us everything that happened. Presumably he said thank you to the woman who housed him for the last year, but that's not, again, we don't need the, it's not telling us everything. He goes, Vayelcha Eliyahu leheros al Achav, to be seen in front of Achav, to Achav, and we're told, parenthetically, Vaharav Chazak b'Shomron. The famine was severe in the Shomron. Shomron, again, was the capital city that Achav was living in. And Shomron also means the surrounding area. Pasuk Gimel. Vayikra Achav el Ovadyahu. Achav called Ovadyahu. So what we're doing now is we're shifting scene. Eliyahu was in Tzarfas, near Tzidon. Hashem tells him to go, so he, gets on his donkey, presumably, or starts walking towards Achav. Achav is probably located in Shomron. Pasuk Gimel is, where's Achav? Vayikra Achav el Ovadyahu. Achav calls someone named Ovadyahu, Asher al Habayis, who was over his household. Va'ovadyahu hayayari es Hashem ma'od. Parenthetically, we are told, almost by like the narrator, that Ovadyahu was fearful of Hashem ma'od. He was very fearful of Hashem. In the Art Scroll translation, they put a parenthesis around the word va'ovadyahu hayayari. It's almost like it's not part. It's because it's clearly not part of the story. And the next pasuk is there to back up and to prove how fearful of God he really was. It's important for us to know who Ovadya is, and we are not told in terms of the pasukim in Tanakh. We're not told everything about Ovadia. Chazal understand Ovadia to have been a convert, a righteous convert, a Ger Tzedek, who had come from the nation of Edom, which comes from Esav. Esav, Edom, and he is a descendant, and he converted very righteously, and he is somehow, even though he is a individual who's Asher al Abayis, he's in charge of the household of Achav, he's still, right, and maybe he gets even more credit, he remains a Yarias Hashem Ma'od. There are some approaches who think that Achav was particular. Achav saw other individuals in history who took righteous individuals into their home and they were blessed for it. Whether it would be Lavan. Lavan was not a nice person, but he had Yaakov in his home, and his home and his flocks were blessed. Potiphar was not a righteous person, but he had Yosef in his home, and he was quite blessed. So Achav did the math and said, "Okay, I'm not so righteous, and I'm good with that. But why don't I hedge my bet, bring in a Yari Es Hashem into my household, and that'll go ahead and bless my household." It didn't work. It didn't work. So some of Farshim say, because if you look at the other individuals, Lavan had very nice children, and Potiphar also had nice children through Chazal understanding, right? And then and Achav, it wasn't the case. Achav, everyone.
But you can't bring someone in saying, like, "I'm going to do a mitzvah because I'm going to get schar for it." Like,
my household will be blessed by having this guy there. That's what it's got. You know,
yeah,
that's an approach.
Like, yeah, but it's like you don't get the blessing
if you're a scoundrel
doing it for the blessing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so he lost.
No, it's out of the goodness of your heart.
Right. So this is Ovadia. He's the same Ovadia that there is a one of the Treyasar, one of the 12 prophets, that's each sefer is considered to be small in terms of number of psukim, and therefore, specifically in a time that they wrote scrolls, if you would have had Ovadia, which is only one chapter, 21 psukim, it could get lost. And so they incorporated all 12. It gets inappropriately translated as the 12 minor prophets, because minor, especially nowadays, minor, you think less. You know, there's major league and minor league. The Chazal are quick to point out that Hosea was on a, who's the first of the Treyasar in terms of the Svarim, was on a hot, whatever it means, was on a higher level than Yeshaya. Yeshaya has 66 prakim, something. Oh, you're 929ers. You're somewhere. You're somewhere in the middle. But the, you know, so it's like 60 something. So 60 something prakim. So you think, whoa, it must be a huge Navi, which he was. But Hosea was on, whatever it means, he was on a higher level. Ovadia has only one chapter. So if you're asked the trivia question, what's the shortest sefer in Tanakh? So you could say Ovadia, but if you incorporate what the Tar Shval Peh has to say about things, so there's a sefer that's even smaller than Ovadia. First of all, sometimes people don't think of it as its own sefer because it gets rolled up into Treyasar. So if you go with what appears to be a sefer, what would be the answer? So I think Rus might be. Rus might be the shortest of the individual Svarim. But according to the Torah Shabbat Peh, when we say that there are 5 Chumashim, we're actually wrong. There actually are 7 Chumashim. That according to the Gemara, Sefer Bamidbar is divided into 3. There's the first part of Bamidbar till the 2 Psukim of Vayhi ben Soa and Vnucha Yomar. Those 2 Psukim are their own Sefer, and then you have the rest of Bamidbar. So there really are 7. Probably doesn't look good. It sounds good. Chamishei Chumshei Torah, 5 of the books of the Torah. It would mess up the song. It would be. But the tradition, according to the Gemara, is that there are 7. We follow that approach. And so the shortest Sefer in Tanakh is actually 2 Psukim. But outside of that, getting fancy, if you're incorporating the 12 prophets, the shortest Sefer is Ovadia. We read it the week of as a Haftorah for Parshas Vayishlach. It talks all of Parshas Vayishlach, which ends with the progeny of Esav, which is Edom. So Vayishlach and Vayishlach, the Haftorah, Ovadia's prophecy, which is, again, if you would put on your 2020 sensitivities, he's a ger from Edom, and he prophesizes about the downfall of Edom. Va'olu Moshe Bahar Tzion Lishbot Eshar Esav. Va'olu Moshe, right, which we incorporate into the davening. That's the last pasuk in that Haftorah, and it's Sefer Avadia. Va'olu Moshiim refers to Mashiach and his gang of, you know, good soldiers. Va'olu Moshe Bahar Tzion, they'll arise on the Mount Zion. Lishbot Eshar Esav, to adjudicate against the mountain of Esav, meaning against the nation of Edom, that destroyed, you know, that Rome is from there, that destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. So that Ovadia is given the gift of prophecy. And Chazal understand he's given the gift of prophecy as a gift. That he was righteous. Yareya es Hashem Ma'od. He wasn't necessarily on the fast track for prophecy. But rather, because of what's about to be described in Pasuk Dalet, he was given the gift of prophecy. Not only is he given the gift of prophecy, he's given, maybe you would say, the ultimate gift of prophecy, because he could have been a prophet in private. He could have just gotten Nevuah, which is a spiritual level, which allows him to receive kind of communications from Hashem, which will impact his life. But he has the ultimate gift in that he gets Nevuah that he actually shares with Klal Yisrael of his era, and that gets written down into the Sifrei Tanakh that we still have access to.
So this is Ovadia who got involved with Elisha. Eventually,
so she, I believe she comes on the coattails of her husband,
right,
recalling the great acts that he did. So what we'll see is the dividends were great for in terms of his decision. The fact that he's a Yarias Hashem Ode, but it was with action. Pasuk Dalet. Again, we're still kind of in the narrator talking. Right, we heard that Achav called out to Ovadia, who was in charge of his house, and now we're being told, almost like, by the way, Ovadia was very fearful of Hashem. Pasuk Dalet, Vayhi b'hachris Izevel es Nevi'ei Hashem. It was a time that Izevel was attempting, and perhaps partially succeeding, l'hachris, to cut off and destroy Nevi'ei Hashem, the prophets of Hashem. It's hard to imagine that in the northern kingdom there were many prophets of Hashem. In this northern kingdom, that for already generation for years and years now, it's ready. We're years and years removed from Yeravim ben Nevat and the beginning of the northern kingdom. But there still were prophets of Hashem who were not protected in the southern kingdom, and that's why Izevel and Achav could get to them. And therefore, Vayikach Ovadyahu Meya Neviim, Ovadya took 100. It might be implying that there were more that for whatever reason he couldn't get to or she got to first. Vayachbi'im chamishim ish bamara. He hid 50 men to a cave. So he found two caves. Each cave was able to have 50 men. V'chilkelam lechem umayim. He provided them sustenance of bread and water. So he saved them. He provided for them. And as is going to be implied by the future psukim, he was able to do this in secret. He was able to do it in secret so that Achav and Izevel never found out. This was his great act, and Chazal, understand that it was due to this great act that Ovadia was granted the gift of prophecy, and that brings about Sefer Ovadia. Pasuk Hey. Back to the story, right? So Achav calls Ovadia, who's in charge of his house. Vayomer Achav el Ovadyahu, Achav says to Ovadia, Lech ba'aretz, go into the land, el kol mayinei hamayim, go to all the springs of water, vel kol nechalim, and all of the streams, ulai nimsa chatzir. Maybe you'll find chatzir refers to a grassy field. Mitzudas Tzion says chatzir is desha, grass, because there hasn't been any rain. So only chance of finding a grassy pasture is if it's near some form of water source, because that's right. That's how it would get watered. So what are we looking for? We're looking for green pasture, unechaya sus v'fered, so that we could keep alive the horses and the mules. V'lu nachris me'abehema. We don't want to be cut off. We don't want to be cut off from the animals. We want to keep the animals alive. There's a motivation specifically on the part of a king that we can't only keep the people alive. We have to try to keep the animals alive. Horses army, power, that they need to keep up appearances. That this is so. This makes sense. And he calls Ovadia. Perhaps he's calling Ovadia. Maybe he doesn't trust anyone else. Because if you find, right, this is all valuable stuff with the water and the pasture. If you find that other people may take it for themselves, and the king won't have it. So he calls Ovadia. It seems to be there's a small mission. It's just him and Ovadia. You have to imagine that Ahab has people with him, and that Ovadia probably has a small group with him, but they're leading the group. Pasuk Vav. Vayichalku lohem es ha'aretz. They divide up the land, not the whole land, but the area where they were looking, lavor ba, to go over it, to split it. It'll be much easier. They'll have a better chance at finding it. Ahav halach b'derech achad levado. Ahav goes by himself, which again, literally sounds like he's by himself. You have a hard time imagining the king is wandering around by himself. And Ovadia's going by themselves, by himself. How each of them, if they find the water, how is each of them going to find the other one? There's no walkie-talkies here. If they really were alone, exactly. So again, maybe they would meet up at a middle place and come back and report to what they found. But they obviously made some system. Some of Farshim think that there's some poetic power to the statement of saying, like Ahav went one way and Ovadia went another way. That Ahav was this king who's an Oved of Uzara, taking one route, and at the fork in the road, Ovadia takes the other route. Ovadia is never influenced by Ahav. And when you incorporate what Chazal said, that Ovadia started out as a non-Jew, and here you have Ahav who started out as a Jew, and they really went the opposite ways. That Ahav intermarried. Ahav kind of almost not left the fold to whatever extent he was biologically Jewish, and he goes out and incorporates Avodah Zarah into his life. Ovadia started out not being Jewish, ends up becoming Ger, ends up becoming right, marries a Jewish woman as we'll see eventually. So they each take their separate path. Pasuk Zayin. Vayihi Ovadyo b'derech. Ovadia is on the way. V'hinei Eliyahu l'kraso, and behold, Eliyahu comes to meet him. Vayakirehu. Ovadia recognizes Eliyahu. Vayipal al panov. Ovadia falls on his face. Vayom, and he says, Ha'ata zeh Adoni Eliyahu. Is that you, my lord Eliyahu? Is it really you? And it's almost like he recognizes him, but he just can't believe that it's him. Eliyahu's been gone for 3 years. And the fact that he recognizes him means that he knows him. So some say, well, if Ovadia was deserving to be a Navi, so he needed a Rebbe. So who is Ovadia's Rebbe? Probably was Eliyahu. That they had a previous relationship. Again, not mentioned in the Psukim. And now he sees him, and he's in shock. He falls on his face out of respect. And he says, is it really you? So Eliyahu answers back to Ovadia, Ani, it's I. Lechemor la'adonecha, go and tell your master, Hine Eliyahu, Eliyahu is here. Meaning, go and tell Ahav, go and tell the king that Eliyahu is here. Pasuk Tes. Vayomer, you have to read these psukim imagining with this request, which Eliyahu believes to be a very simple request. Mm-hmm. You're in charge of the house. Go and tell the king that I want to see him. You have to imagine Ovadia's face turns pale, mm-hmm. and he's in shock. Vayomer, he says, Mechotasi, what have I sinned? What sin have I done? Ki ata nosein avdecha biyad achav lahamiseni. That you are giving over your servant, giving me, your servant, over into the hands of Ahav, lahamiseni, to kill me. Meaning his understanding is that by him going and telling Ahav that Eliyahu is there, that will cause his own death. Why? So again, we have, for the last 3 years, they've been totally separate. And we have been only with Eliyahu. So we have not had a window into what was going on in the kingdom in the last 3 years. We've heard that Izebel at one point went on a campaign to try to cut off the Nevi'ei Hashem. Thank God Ovadia was there to save at least 100 of them. But what else was happening during this time that Eliyahu wasn't there? It would make sense. It would make sense to say that Achav was maybe looking for Eliyahu. Eliyahu says it's not going to be rain. All of a sudden, there's no rain. So maybe the first day, second month, Achav is willing to say, this is a coincidence, and it just happened to be. But then as time goes on, who is to blame for there being no rain? The easiest thing is to blame Eliyahu. So now Ovadia is informing Eliyahu, and it almost sounds like Eliyahu is unaware. Just because you're a Navi doesn't mean you know everything. It means you know the things that Hashem wants you to know. And for whatever reason, perhaps Hashem didn't want Eliyahu to know what was going on. But Pasuk Yud informs, Ovadia's talking, Chai Hashem Elokecha, I swear by the life of Hashem, an oath with Hashem, Im Yesh Goy Umamlocha Asher Lo Shalach Adoni Sham Levakshecha. I swear that if there is a nation or kingdom or a nation that my master did not send looking for you, meaning everywhere in the north, he was in our kingdom, but not only that, in the kingdoms beyond, in the neighboring countries. Now, whether Achav actually reached out to the southern kingdom, to Malchus Yehuda, it's not implied at all. We would have to imagine that we keep hearing about how the main terms weren't so good between the two. So, but definitely the other countries, and you wouldn't necessarily refer to Im Yesh Goy U'Mamlacha, maybe Mamlacha would refer to the south, but definitely not Goy would. So that he's telling there hasn't been, he's looking everywhere. But Amru Ayin, and all of those nations said no, meaning we're not housing Eliyahu, or at least they're saying we're not aware of the fact that Eliyahu is with us. V'hishbias Mamlacha v'esagoy asher lo yimtzeka. Not only that, he had each of these, that Achav had each of these kingdoms or countries or nations swear to the fact, swear to this constant, swear to this idea, ki lo yimtzucha, that they could not find you. So this is for what we think, this is news to Eliyahu. He wasn't aware of this. But it's painting a certain picture that Achav and Izebel really had it out. There's a death sentence. There's a desire to find Eliyahu, perhaps kill him, and he's public enemy number one. Pasuk Yud Aleph. The Ata, and now, Ata Omer, you are saying, you Eliyahu are saying, Lech Emor Ladonecha Hine Eliyahu. Go and tell your master, oh, by the way, Eliyahu is here. Now, that in and of itself is not a problem. What Ovadia envisions is he tells Achav that Eliyahu is around, and Achav is going to call the firing squad. But what happens after he calls the firing squad? Pasuk Yud Beis. At least this is going on in Ovadia's mind. Ovadia, again, seems to be very respectable. Yari Elokim Ma'od, he given the gift of prophecy. But these are just his raw emotions spilling out. He says, V'haya ani, in Pasuk Yud Beis, V'haya ani elech meitach. As soon as I go from you, after you told me to tell Achav that you're alive, or you're here, I'm going to leave you. V'ruach Hashem yisacha al asher lo yida. The wind of Hashem, the spirit of Hashem will carry you off, will lift you off to a place that I don't know where you are. Uvasi lahagid la'achav, and I'm going to go and tell Achav that you are there. V'lo yimtzacha, and you're not going to be found. V'haragani, he's going to kill me. Why is he going to kill me? He's going to kill me. Either he's going to kill me because maybe he thinks we're in cahoots. I told him you were here, and now I was just telling him to buy more time so you could get away, and I have no idea where you are. I won't be able to find. So v'haragani, you're going to kill. They'll kill me, and. The pasuk concludes by he's saying just very honestly, the avdecha yari es Hashem minu uray, your servant has been fearful of Hashem minu uray, from my youth, which on the one hand you could say it's sounds a little boastful to say about himself. I mean, before when we said he was a Yare, we said he was a Yare Es Hashem Ma'od, that was the Navi talking about him as narrator. Here it's Ovadia talking about himself, and he says, well, I am fearful of Hashem in Nu'urai for my youth. So the Gemara says that if you're not around many people, you can talk about some of your quote-unquote positive traits. It's not being boastful. He's also under a lot of pressure when he says this. It's fascinating that Chazal understands him to be a ger, to be a convert, and he says, Yare Es Hashem in Nu'urai for my youth. What does he mean by that? Does he mean... this is possible. A person can convert when they're very young. A nar, sometimes we hear the phrase nar, so we know, right? One of the most famous nars in history was Yosef. Yosef is described as a nar, that he took up the activity of a nar being with his hair. And Yosef was 17 years old. So if you're 17, you're a nar. So he could have converted at 16, and he'd still be called a nar. Maybe it's even possible to entertain that, you know, can you be a Yare Es Hashem when you haven't yet converted? You are a non-Jew. You embrace the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, which includes not worshiping idols, and therefore you could be described as a Yare Es Hashem. Minurai, at some point, he graduated and went with it, and went on this spiritual journey and became a Ger Tzedek. Either way works. And he's saying this about himself, he's trying to say, you know, I shouldn't be this guy who goes and is put, this is not my lot, or at least it shouldn't be, from his perspective. And you have to imagine that Ovadia, who's trying to get out of this mission, if Eliyahu would say, do it anyway, he'll do it. But he's at least making his case for why maybe he shouldn't be the one to do this mission. Pasuk Yud Gimel, he continues, Halohu Gad La'adoni Eis Asher Asisi? Was it not told to my master, meaning you, Eliyahu, was it not told to you, Eis Asher Asisi, that which I did? Baharog Izevel as Nevi Hashem, when Izevel was killing the prophets of Hashem, Va'achbi Minevi Hashem, and I hid from the prophets of Hashem, Mea Ish, 100 men, Chamishim Chamishim Ish Bamara, 50-50 in a cave, Va'achal kaleim lechem umayim, and I served them, I provided them with bread and water. So you could ask, you know, why is it necessary that we hear the narrator introduce Ovadia to us with this fact? If we then, Ovadia himself testifies to this fact. Why do we need both? So I think perhaps if we would only have Ovadia saying it, we would think, you know, he's almost like tooting his horn a little bit too much. We had already heard it as objective fact. It was objective fact. And as Chazal say, it's the reason why he received prophecy. So then when he says it about himself, it's kind of like we're understanding it in a certain context.
Unless he's saying that if Nachal will kill me, there'll be nobody to feed these 50-50s.
Ah, so he's bringing it in as a, you know, I know where they are. I know where they are, and I'm the one who's feeding them.
I'm feeding them, so...
Do we know that he's still having them? Like, it's still going on, or this was in the past?
I don't know. It's not a long time, because it's only been three years. When he says in the beginning of Yud Gimel, Halohu Gad La'adoni, was it not told to my master? So first of all, we don't know that it ever was. It could be that Ovadia is informing Eliyahu of this right now. Meaning, just like we said before, just because Eliyahu is a Navi doesn't mean he knows everything. Right. And the question is, who else knows about Ovadia's great miracle? So some say that many people knew Ovadia's great miracle, that Ovadia's heroic efforts of hiding, and they never told Achav. The time period of Achav was, there wasn't a lot of gossip. There wasn't a lot of bad talk about or talk about others. And that Chazal even compare and contrast that Achav didn't have, in the times of Achav, there weren't military losses due to the fact that maybe their Bein Adam L'Makom was challenging in terms of Avodah Zarah seems to be crazy, rampant, but their Bein Adam L'Chaveru in terms of let's say ratting on each other was respectful. So Eliyahu doesn't reply back whether or not he had heard this, or
Perhaps Ovadia was actually telling him, and he's just building his case. Whether he's building his case to say, I'm deserving of a little bit more kindness than the average person, whether he's building his case to say, well, I'm still doing this. I'm still providing for these individuals. And see, he closes his remarks by saying, Pasuk Yudalid, the Ata, and now he circles back to it. Ata Omer, you are saying, Lech emor la'adonecha, go and tell your master, Hinei Eliyahu, that behold Eliyahu is here, v'hargani. He's going to kill me. In Ovadia's mind, this is going to happen, right? Eliyahu had come face to face with Achav when he threatened the rain, and then Eliyahu disappears. So that, right, the same way we were learning the Pesukim and saying, oh, why was it that Hashem didn't provide a different kind of miracle where Eliyahu could be right in the face of Achav, and Achav can want to kill him, and it just won't work. It just won't go. So the same way that we were looking at the situation and saying, well, Hashem doesn't usually do that. That's why he removes Eliyahu from the picture. He's hidden. The miracle is happening, but it's on the side. No one knows about it. So Ovadia is thinking that that's probably going to happen again. And he'll be left on the line. V'hargani, he's going to kill me. Pasuk Tesvav. Vayomer Eliyahu. So Eliyahu says back to this, you know, most nervous Ovadia. And I feel like, you know, sometimes you feel like the human emotions coming through the words of the Tanakh, maybe in a way other times you don't. Vayomer Eliyahu responds back, Chai Hashem Tzvakos, by the life of Hashem, Hashem Tzvakos. When Ovadia takes the Shvua about the fact that Achav's been looking for him, he says, Chai Hashem Elokecha. He puts Hashem almost in the court of Eliyahu. Eliyahu is probably the prophet who's on a higher level. And so he doesn't say Hashem, he refers to Hashem in a more objective way. Nothing about him. He refers to, right? Chai Hashem Tzvakos, Hashem, take a Shvua by the life of Hashem, the Lord of hosts, Asher Amarati Lefanov, before whom I have stood, which was the similar language that he used when he took the Shvua to start the rain, when he was talking to Achav initially. Asher Amarati, we said Amida is a language of tefillah, before him who I have stood in prayer. Ki Hayom Era Elav, for today I will appear to him. Your concern, that your number one concern is that you're going to tell him I'm around and I'm going to be out of here. And almost saying that perhaps underlying in Ovadia's concern is that even Eliyahu, even if you want to actually show yourself to Achav, the fact is Achav's going to be riling the troops, he's going to be setting up the firing squad, and so Hashem is going to whisk you away. So what Eliyahu does is he takes a shvua. He takes a shvua that today I'm going to see. And the idea is that Hashem will respect Eliyahu's shvua so much so that he'll make sure of it, he's committing, that he will make himself seen, he will see Achav today. And so the concern, Ovadia is going to go and tell the king, by the way, Eliyahu is here, and then Eliyahu will be here. So that all Ovadia will be doing at that point is just being the loyal servant to Achav, which he is. And Achav doesn't have to know that Ovadia is subservient to Eliyahu, that Ovadia still perhaps, presumably he has no idea that he's been saving the prophets, because if he did, it would probably be off with his head. That has stayed secret. So Eliyahu, with one shvua, calms him down. Pasuk Tazayin. Vayelach Ovadiyahu lekras Achav. So Ovadia goes and to greet Achav. Again, they were on this mission trying to find green pasture. They found it, so he found Achav. Vayagid lo, and he told him that Eliyahu was around. Vayelach Achav lekras Eliyahu. So Achav goes to greet Eliyahu. Pasuk Yedzayin. Vayikiros Achav es Eliyahu. It was when Achav sees Eliyahu, and again, they haven't seen each other in 3 years, and their last interaction was Eliyahu taking a shvua that there won't be any rain. Vayomer Achav Elav, Achav says to Eliyahu, Ha'ata ze Ocher Yisrael? Is that you, O Ocher Yisrael? The Mesudas Tzion defines Ocher as a mashchis u'mechabel, someone who's destructive and causes wounds. Art Scroll translates it as a troubler. and
brings trouble
upon Israel. So those are two translations that we have. A troublemaker. It almost sounds like a troublemaker. I think the Mesuzah Siman makes it sound much worse. Mashkes u'machabel. More trouble. I don't know. I could describe if I describe a kid to a principal as a troublemaker, it's not necessarily mashkes u'machabel. That's very destructive. I think it ups the ante. So I don't know why they chose troubler. So is that you? Is that you? Again, there may be some. Maybe he thinks it's Eliyahu, maybe it's not. Some of Farshim say Eliyahu's hair had grown out since he had been on the run. Is that you? So he pasuk yudches vayomer. Eliyahu answers back, Lo acharti es Yisrael. It is not I who has caused trouble for Israel. Ki imata ubeis avicha. Only you and your father's household. Be'azavchem es mitzvas Hashem, in your forsaking the commandments of Hashem, vatelach achari ha'ba'olim, and going after Baal, right? That not only did you not go after, not only did you violate the mitzvahs of Hashem, and in parentheses, not only did you worship Avodah Zarah, which what others did, but vatelach achari ha'ba'olim, you brought in Baal. Baal, that was unique to Achav, specifically through Izebel, his wife, from a foreign country, bringing in an even more foreign Avodah Zarah that was not native to the land of Canaan. And he says, so he says, basically he's answering back, he never says yes. He never says, I am. The implication is, right, you have to think, who else in the northern kingdom has the guts to answer back Achav in such a disrespect? He's talking to the king. He's talking to the king. But if you're Eliyahu, if you're the one who actually started the droughting and had it gone for 3 years, so then you have the guts. Eliyahu keeps talking. Va'ata in Pasuk Yutes, va'ata and now, shalach kivotz Eli es kol Yisrael el har ha-karmel. Go, send out and gather, kivotz, kibbutz. Go and gather for me, or to me, all of the Jews, all of Yisrael, a representative of the northern kingdom, el har ha-karmel, to Mount Carmel. V'es nevi'ei ha-baal, and invite as well the prophets of Baal, Arba Meos V'chamishim, 450 of them, Unevi'ei ha-asherah, Arba Meos, and the 400 prophets of the Asherah type of Avodah Zarah, which is tree-based, Ochle Shulchan Izevel, those who eat by the table of Izevel, which some understand to be talking about all 850, others understand it's just talking about the Nevi'ei Asherah, that Ochle Shulchan, they were supported by Izevel. Izevel supported their sustenance. And so we have no indication that Eliyahu was told by Hashem to do this. It seems to be that this is coming from him, that the rain has to come, but the way in which the rain is going to come, Eliyahu gets to kind of choose and direct how it's going to happen. So he wants it to, right now, again, many of us are familiar with the story, but it's best, like every story in Tanakh, to try to go into it, try to forget what you know and go into it with a fresh perspective. He clearly wants something to be very public after having been hidden for 3 years. He wants to be very much in the public. And what's also fascinating, and it's a question that maybe we'll circle back next time, is that Achav doesn't even answer. The next pasuk, which we'll do next time, is that Achav just listens. He actually invites everyone. He sends out the messengers to invite everyone to Har HaKarmel. He goes along with Eliyahu's plan. Why is he going along with Eliyahu's plan? So you have to imagine that Achav is pretty firm in his belief that Eliyahu is going to, whatever Eliyahu is trying to do, the egg is going to be on Eliyahu, the yolk is going to be on Eliyahu's face. And therefore he's going along with it, thinking that he'll get the better of Eliyahu, as opposed to just grabbing Eliyahu, killing Eliyahu. He thinks that maybe it'll be even a greater, greater insult and a greater lesson that he'll be able to teach the nation being anti-Eliyahu if he actually goes along with Eliyahu's plan. So Bez Hashem, next time, we'll continue with the Har HaKarmel story. When you say Chazal,